USC football had its first ever spring game with head coach Lincoln Riley. So what were the biggest takeaways from LA over the weekend? We get to that today on Locked On Pac-12. Let's go.
Locked On Pac-12, your daily podcast on the Pac-12 Conference. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Pac-12. I'm your host, Spencer McLaughlin, D1 play-by-play broadcaster. Thanks for making this your first listen or your first view if you're watching on YouTube every day, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. This is your number one source to stay up to date with everything going on in the Pac-12 conference. Like and subscribe wherever you are listening to and or watching the show. Those subscription numbers keep going up. I appreciate seeing that. Please continue to make it happen. So USC football over the weekend had its first spring game under Lincoln Riley, and we're getting to that today. And this is going to be the first of 12 straight episodes in which we look at every team's spring game, the latest headlines, players who stood out, the headlines that are going to come out afterwards, you know, kind of the storylines moving forward. We will look at all of that for all 12 teams, because as I mentioned in the open here, this is your number one source to stay up to date with the Pac-12 conference. So USC football. Biggest takeaways. Number one, first and foremost, the thing that popped off the screen was offense. And no one who knows anything about college football over the last 5 or 6 years should be surprised by that. When Lincoln Riley is your head coach, the offense is going to be the showcase. It's not going to be great special teams or great defense or, you know, even these huge mega recruits, though Caleb Williams falls into that category for sure. It's going to be offensive output. That is the name of the game. And the number one thing that stood out to me when I saw their offense play over the weekend against their defense in the spring game was that their use of the transfer portal appears to be off to a very good start. Now, I've mentioned on this show before how the recruiting class for the class of 2022 is down in like the mid 60s or so. It's one of the lower ones in the Pac-12, which is true and is noteworthy, and I didn't expect Lincoln Riley to come in and be able to, you know, suddenly bolster it up the way Dan Lanning did at Oregon, though that even that was a little bit surprising, but with the way Lanning has assembled his staff, that's sort of what you should expect, not the way that he did it this year. I think he exceeded expectations to have the top class in the Pac-12 in 2022, but Lincoln Riley has recruited good players over the years, but he's not known first and foremost as a recruiter. So his success on the high school recruiting trail in the early going, I think, is, you know, TBD, right? He got a commitment from a four-star running back in the class of 2023 that I talked about last week on the show. But something that he has done very well has been hitting the transfer portal and taking advantage of the new NCAA rule where guys can get a one-time freebie. It's not unlimited. They get one transfer where they can be eligible immediately, and they have done that very, very well. They have the second highest rated class only looking at transfers in the country. Now, a big part of that, of course, is Caleb Williams, but it's not as if Caleb Williams doesn't count. I'm just saying that that's contributing to the rating in a major way. But they've brought in a lot of high-level players, right? They brought in Travis Dye from Oregon, who was an All-Pac-12 performer a season ago. They brought in Austin Jones from Stanford. Darwin Barlow is a transfer from TCU. I believe he was on the team last year. If I'm wrong on that, you can correct me in the comments below here on YouTube or wherever you're listening to the show on podcast. But that was evident immediately that their success in the transfer portal is going to translate to guys who play immediately on the field and are going to be able to produce in a Lincoln Riley offense, because Lincoln Riley, as we know, is going to score a lot of points. That's just the name of the game here. That's every indication that we have from him as a coach. He was an offensive coordinator before the head coach at Oklahoma, and they've never had an issue scoring points. They've had an issue stopping people, but they've rarely had any issues scoring points back there in Norman. And you know, the Big 12 has a reputation of not playing a lot of defense, which is often true. I think besides TCU, they don't really have a defensively branded school. And now TCU doesn't even have Gary Patterson anymore. Well, the Pac-12 doesn't have that reputation either. I mean, Cal is a good defense every year. That's about it. I mean, Oregon's had some good ones, but they've never been great. I think Utah's kind of in the same vein. You know, like those have been the best teams, but I wouldn't consider them elite defenses per se. Cal, I think, has been the only team year in and year out that, you know, has a really, really solid defense. Oregon's this past year had a lot of good players, Noah Sewell and Kayvon Thibodeau, Mikhail Wright, Verone McKinley, who are all going to the NFL, but they were a little bit iffy. So looking at the offensive side of the ball, USC is going to be able to have success. And Caleb Williams hooked up with Mario Williams for a couple of touchdowns. He actually completed his first 9 passes in this game, which is a good start even for Caleb Williams. Even when you can't hit the quarterback, you go 9 for 9 passing. I think it shows the continuity and trust that Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley developed during their 1 year together in Norman. So that's not going to be an issue, or at least you would think, right? Is the transfers are going to make an impact at the running back position. Mario Williams on the outside. They also added Terrell Bynum, wide receiver from Washington. And Caleb Williams, the top transfer everyone will talk about, understandably so, will be a top 5 pick most likely in the NFL class of 2024. So the other thing that stood out in this game is that all the highlights were offensive, which, as I mentioned a moment ago, is not all that surprising. Because it's Lincoln Riley. That's what he does. That's what he cares about the most. And offensive coaches, I think, zone in on their side of the ball and don't pay as much attention to defense, more so than a defensively minded coach does, if that makes sense. Like, I think Dan Lanning is involved more with the offense at Oregon, even though he's a former defensive coordinator, than Lincoln Riley is involved with the defense at USC, or at least as he will be. It's not that he ignores it entirely, but if you're calling that side of the ball, that's typically where you're going to put a lot of your energy. And I think it's just the way that those sorts of things begin to shape out. But, you know, I expect Lincoln Riley to be able to score points and, you know, to add players in the portal. And I expect he'll be able to recruit at a high level as well, to bring in skill position players who want to come play for one of the best offensive minds in college football. I expect that to happen. USC fans should expect that to happen. And there's a really good chance that it will. But Lincoln Riley doesn't have as much work to do on that side of the ball, even though USC is down as a program, as Alex Grinch does on the defensive side, because they were not just bad this past season. They were really, really, I mean, go watch that game against UCLA. That was in the Coliseum. And Chip Kelly and Dorian Thompson-Robinson were running wild all over the field and scoring a bunch of points. USC could not get a stop to save their lives. And so they've added some transfers on that side, a couple guys from the SEC, but overall, there's still a lot of work to be done on that side of the ball. And it's a big task for Alex Grinch, because he's proven that he can get capable defenses to win games with Lincoln Riley's offense, but he hasn't yet had to build a defense up from scratch the way that he is going to here at USC. And there weren't really any defensive highlights in this game. There was an interception, but it was called back because of pass interference. So I think that he's got a tougher task on that side of the ball than Lincoln Riley does on the offensive side in terms of getting USC back to where they want to be, back to where they expect to be in Los Angeles, which is the premier football brand on the West Coast, which as of this moment, they're most definitely not. Though with Lincoln Riley, they are moving in that direction. I can't put them there yet, because you have to have the on-field results to match the off-field hype, but Lincoln Riley, we know, is capable of doing just that. The other big takeaway here, and this builds off the program building point I was alluding to a moment ago, there were a record number of fans at this game for USC, over 33,000. And what I'll say about that is building a program doesn't happen solely internally. Now, is it 90% internal? Yeah, probably, or somewhere in there. You can divvy up the percentages however you want. It's mostly about what you do as a coaching staff, bringing in players and establishing a culture and executing on game days. Yes, but the fans do play a role here. And I've been to a game at the Coliseum back in 2019. I went down for the Oregon-USC game, and Oregon ended up trouncing them after spotting them 10 points. Through the first quarter, they came back with Justin Herbert on that Rose Bowl team and ran him out of the Coliseum. And USC fans were leaving early, and they hadn't packed the place the way that they used to back in the day beforehand, you know, when the game before the game got out of hand. So you have to have buy-in from your fans. You have to have buy-ins from the community and from donors, because that helps with recruiting in a big way. And if Lincoln Riley is going to turn this around, yeah, he has to be the wizard that he is, calling plays on Saturdays in the fall, but he also has to be able to bring in high-level guys to compete at a high level. If USC is going to get to the college football playoff for the first time and be winning national championships, or at least contending for them with Lincoln Riley, the way a lot of USC fans, I think, hope, and that this is the sort of guy that brings that sort of expectation, or at least that desire, or at least that vision of, hey, this is now possible. You have to have the buy-in there. So I think that's a good sign that fans are starting to understand that, there's a buzz here and that something is building and that USC is in the midst of getting back to where they were in the Pete Carroll days, where they just have not been since he left. So I think that's a good sign for USC. There are a few players who earn more playing time based on the spring game. I'll tell you who they are, but first I want to tell you about Built Bar. You know, I love Built Bars. I've never been a Power Bar guy, literally ever, ever. I never was. And then I tried Built Bars and boom, I load them up in my golf bag. I've got them in my pantry because they are amazing. They got a bunch of great flavors. They're covered in 100% real chocolate, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, just 130 calories with 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar. Yeah, let me tell you, it's not close. Go to built.com, use promo code LOCK15. Get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. This episode also brought to you by Athletic Greens. Speaking of eating healthier, Athletic Greens is a really easy way to do this. So what is this stuff? With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. Just mix it in with some water, drink it all, boom, you're good to go. That's it. That's all it is. The great thing about it, it's lifestyle friendly. Whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, it costs you less than $3 a day. It has over 7,000 five-star reviews. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/college. That is athleticgreens.com/college to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Go check them out at Athletic Greens. Three players who earned playing time in this spring game, who I thought showed something more or at least slightly above what they were expecting, right? Maybe weren't, you know, dominating, taking over the game, and oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy was so good. You know, you can have a number of takeaways from a spring game. Can you know everything? No, but there is still a lot to discern from watching guys on the field, because it's different than practice. It's not quite a game, but it's pretty close to a game. You know, the format that USC went with, which, by the way, I'm not a huge fan of, you know, where the defense starts with 21 points and then the offense comes out and, you know, has a way to score points, which is a normal way. But then the defense gets 3 points first. I'm more a fan of the way Oregon did it and a lot of other schools have done it, which is you divide everybody up into two teams. You put some expected starters on one side and some on the other. You mix in some reserves, and you just play a regular football game. I think that gives guys a better opportunity and a more realistic way to showcase what they can do. But I understand why coaches do it this way. USC also has just 2 scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. Caleb Williams is one, and then Miller Moss, the 4-star quarterback who made some really nice throws in this game, was another. So that probably contributed to it, because ideally you have 2 quarterbacks that you could put on each side if you're going to divide up into, you know, what would be a red and a gold team for USC, for example. So there were some players who I thought stood out. One was Kyron Ware Hudson, a wide receiver. And the pass catchers are going to be interesting to look at for USC this year. Mario Williams is going to be the number one wide receiver. He will lead the Trojans in receiving yards, probably receptions and touchdowns as well. I know I'm going way out on a limb here when I say that, because he and Caleb Williams already have a track record of success. They already have that chemistry. They know how to, you know, how to call routes with one another, just with hand gestures. We saw that a couple times. They know the time that they have all that stuff down. And they've already been doing it in a superior conference in the Big 12. Now they come over to the Pac-12. They should be able to be extremely productive. And I expect to see a number of 100-yard games. But the thing about that is, when everyone knows that those two are going to try to link up as often as they can, and that those two have the established chemistry, and that they're both explosive players as well, Williams with his arm, and Mario Williams can do it, you know, in a number of ways, really. He can run the whole route tree. He's good down the sideline, one-on-one situations in the red zone. Like, he really does it all. You have to have complementary options. And I talked recently on a pod here about Gary Bryant Jr. and whether or not he could become that second option. I thought Kyron Ware Hudson showed some really good things. He made a couple of nice contested catches, one of which was in traffic down the sideline. You know, he was contorting his body, twisting around and making a catch with a defender basically draped all over him. I thought that was really good. He also took the ball on an end around, showed an ability to make plays in open space, and it has some nice speed as well. So there are going to be other weapons that Caleb Williams has to be able to develop a rapport with. He has to be able to, you know, go to them in certain situations. But you can't just be the way that Aaron Rodgers is with Davante Adams, right, where you know he's going to him all the time. That was Green Bay's downfall, inevitably, in the playoffs this past year. He forced the ball to Davante Adams. Alan Lazard was wide open, but he didn't trust Alan Lazard the way he did Davante Adams. So Caleb Williams knows that he's going to be able to rely on Mario Williams, but he can't just rely on Mario Williams. He has to figure out other safety options, and maybe it'll be Gary Bryant, maybe it'll be Kyron Ware-Hudson, but one of them is going to have to step up in a big way. Also be curious to see how they use the tight ends. Oklahoma's had some great tight ends over the years, and Lincoln Riley knows how to use them, but I don't think the Trojans have, you know, really a go-to player of that sort on their roster. So I'll be interested to see how that unit develops as time goes on as well. A couple other guys who definitely earn more playing time in USC spring game. Austin Jones, the running back transfer from Stanford. Now, their running back room is all transfers. Relique Brown, class of 2022, will join the team in the summer. We'll see where he fits in, but I got to tell you, it's going to be tough pickings unless there's an injury in the backfield, because you have Travis Dye, who ran wild in this conference and did everything for Oregon's offense last year because Anthony Brown didn't really like throwing the ball beyond the line of scrimmage very often. So he caught a bunch of passes, and he ran the ball well, and he can run inside and outside, make guys miss, and he's just an effective running back through and through. Austin Jones, a transfer from Stanford, who was, you know, on the whole kind of underutilized during his time in Palo Alto with David Shaw, he looked really, really good in this game. And he had a nice touchdown run from about the 5 or 6 yard line on third and goal, where he worked his way through a couple of tacklers and he finished runs hard. I think that's the thing that I like most about Austin Jones, is his ability to finish runs was really, really impressive. And I think that that's going to be looked upon favorably by Lincoln Riley, because you think back to the Oklahoma running backs the last couple of years, you know, Ramondre Stevenson, Kennedy Brooks, they've been bigger guys, right? Travis Dye's a little smaller, though he can run between the tackles. He's more than capable, did so all last year. Austin Jones, a little bit bigger, and I think is going to finish runs the way that Lincoln Riley's accustomed to seeing with his running backs. And so I think he's earned at least a number two role, or maybe a number 1B role where Travis Dye might be 1A. I think both those guys will get plenty of touches. There's one defensive player who I think earned some more playing time after this spring game from USC. I'll tell you who that is. But first, BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs and info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of Major League Baseball. Go Mariners. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to the playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today, or you can use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, so who's the defensive player who has earned some more playing time? I want to talk about a defensive player who didn't stand out in a major way, but I think USC fans are expecting to pop, and that's Corey Foreman. I mean, he was one of the top recruits in the country. I think he was the top recruit in the class of 2020. And he has not performed up to that level, right? Think about when Kayvon Thibodeau went to Oregon. He's gotten a lot of hype and media attention, made a bunch of plays. Corey Foreman hasn't been that for USC just yet. He could become that. Maybe he just needs a new DC and Alex Grinch. But a guy that he might want to have on the other side to attract some of the pass-blocking attention would be somebody like Romello Height, who showed some good things on defense. He had a sack in this game. He's an Auburn transfer, one of the SEC guys that I alluded to earlier in the show. He's got 3 years of eligibility left, so he's got the potential to become, you know, sort of a mainstay, an opposite of Corey Foreman on that side of the ball for USC and defensive coordinator Alex Grinch. Will he become that? I don't know, but from watching him in the spring game, I thought he had some nice moments. He, like I said, he had a sack. He's 6'2", 230 pounds. I think he just has the tools to be a solid contributor for USC as an edge player, getting after the passer and, you know, maybe making some plays in the run game as well. But USC just needs those sorts of guys on defense who can just make plays. I mean, a defensive coordinator Yeah, he has to be smart schematically. Of course. Of course. But sometimes a great defense is just a great guy making a play. I mean, think back to, you know, those Baltimore Ravens defenses, right? With Ed Reed and Ray Lewis. Yeah, they had some smart defensive coordinators come through there. But you know what else they had? Sometimes Ed Reed would just go out there, and no matter what play was called, he was just going to make a play. Or sometimes Terrell Suggs would beat his guy one-on-one and make a sack. Or sometimes Ray Lewis would pop a guy over the middle and jar the ball free to force a turnover. Right? Sometimes you just need dudes like that. And so that's what USC has to be able to find on defense. And I think offense is going to be an easy sell with Lincoln Riley. Historically, it has been. But defense, that's going to be a lot tougher for a team that has struggled on defense the last several years. So they don't have, you know, that branding as a place where recruits will want to go on the defensive side of the ball. Now, again, they have brought over a couple of guys in the portal. We'll see if Romello Height can be an impact player, but they brought over another player from the SEC, a guy from Bama, whose name is eluding me right now. You can drop it in the comments below on YouTube if you know. It went right out of my mind. But anyway, they just need some playmakers. I mean, I can give you a handful of great USC receivers and even some running backs, you know, over the last couple of years who have been nice players. You know, Ronald Jones is in the NFL, and we know the quarterbacks that they've had, and Juju Smith-Schuster and Marquise Lee and Robert Woods and Drake London and, you know, all these sorts of guys. Give me the last great USC defensive player. What was it, Taylor Mays? Do we have to go that far back? I mean, they've just not been known for having those sorts of players on that side of the ball, and I think that's something that USC has to be able to do. So final segment today as we wrap up the first of our spring game recaps. Again, we will be doing this here on the show for every single Pac-12 team. It'll be 12 days in a row, one team at a time, full in-depth, looking at the biggest takeaways, the players who, you know, stood out and maybe deserve a little more playing time, and then the storylines coming out of it. That will be the next 12 shows here on Locked On Pac-12, which is why you should like and subscribe if you have not already. For those of you that have, I very much thank you and appreciate every single one of you. So the biggest storylines for USC going forward, are they going to keep hitting the portal with this great success? Because they have the number 2 rated transfer portal class in the country, right? There's, you know, now 3 classifications for your classes in each recruiting cycle on 24/7 Sports. There's your high school recruiting class, there's your transfer portal recruiting class, and then there's your overall composite class, which is, you know, factoring in both the high school kids you're bringing in and the transfers that you're coming in. And USC's class of 2022 looks a lot better when you factor in the transfers, of course, because they've been number 2 at getting players in the portal, at least according to 24/7. I think that that's generally correct. So if they're going to continue hitting the transfer portal with great success, the next place they need to go is offensive line, because there were some nice plays made by some defensive end with some moves, but overall, you know, the second stringers on USC, they're not up to where you need them to be. If you read stuff from people who cover the Trojans, they'll tell you the same thing. And the offensive line wasn't very good last year. They couldn't run the ball consistently, you know, even with a talented back like Malapai. So I think USC, if they're going to keep hitting the portal, I think the next place to go is the offensive line. I know I've talked a lot about the defense and the need to add players there, but, you know, they've already brought in a couple of guys on that side of the ball. And this is the other thing that's, I think, a reality for USC football. They don't need to build a great defense. They do not. That is not what they need to win the Pac-12 and get to the college football playoff. Oklahoma never had a great defense. They never did. But they had defenses that were good enough. And that's what USC needs. And their defenses haven't been good enough. And the offenses have been, you know, too inconsistent over the last several years as well under Clay Helton. That's why the program has struggled writ large, hence the 4-8 season last year. But if the defense can just be like average in the Pac-12, I think Lincoln Riley is smart enough to elevate the offense to a point where they'll be so far above everybody else and they'll be so hard to stop, especially for the next 2 years with Caleb Williams and Mario Williams as well, that they will just win games because of their offense. But they had games last year, like against UCLA, where they scored plenty of points, but their defense was so bad sometimes that it wasn't enough. So they don't need to build, you know, some vaunted high-end SEC caliber defense. They don't need that. They don't even need to build, you know, a peak TCU defense from the Big 12. They just need to be competent. And that's the biggest question I have, is I think USC's success going into 2022 will largely be determined by how they fill out their offensive line and how successful Alex Grinch can be coaching up the defense. Because if you look back at 2022 and you see that USC statistically has a defense that's middle of the pack, I think the Trojans win at least 9 games, maybe 10 or 11, but that's an if, right? That's my reservation about saying, oh, they're going to win, you know, 10, 11 games this year in year one under Lincoln Riley. No, I think it's probably more like an 8-9 win season. And then once they start to get their guys into the program, then they'll be able to win double digit games. But I see it as being a lot tougher this year because of the amount of work needed on that side of the ball. But if they can just be average, not asking for a lot, Not asking for a lot. I don't need you to put the ball on the green from the woods. I just need you to be able to punch out and get it in the fairway. If Alex Grinch can do that, then USC can be pretty successful with the offensive skill pieces they have in 2022. I appreciate everyone listening and have a wonderful rest of your day.